Welkom bij de paardenpodcast van Horse in Mind. In deze podcast spreek ik mensen die bijdragen aan de verbetering van paardenwelzijn. De paardenpodcast wordt mede mogelijk gemaakt door Horse in Mind, kennisplatform over paardenwelzijn, en Rianne Dekker holistische paardenrevalidatie voor een gezond en blij paard. Kleine mededeling vooraf. Er bleek iets mis te zijn met de audio. De hele podcast is gewoon verstaanbaar en begrijpelijk. Maar je doet er goed aan om hem te luisteren met oortjes. Dan is het geluid het beste. Veel luisterplezier. Hi, leuk dat je luistert naar de Paardenpodcast. Dit is alweer aflevering 6 en ik ben hier vandaag met Zoe Coat. Ik ken haar eigenlijk nog niet zo heel erg goed. Ik heb een hele tijd in de buurt gewoond en ik volg haar al een hele tijd op Facebook en Instagram. Dus ik vind het ontzettend leuk om haar een keer live te spreken. Ze is natural horsemanship instructeur, heeft 2 paarden en heeft 2 boeken geschreven. Dus in deze podcast gaan we het hebben over deze onderwerpen. Met 1 verschil is dat het helemaal in het Engels gaat zijn. Dat is haar moedertaal en dus het makkelijkst en begrijpelijkst voor jullie. So from here on, I'm gonna continue in English. Zoe, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks for that introduction already, Rihanna. I'm actually also a horse professional, an award-winning author, and a poet, and also an award-winning poet. But despite that, my passion for horses is since I was 2 years old. I grew up in the suburbs of London, a stone's throw from where the horses live. A lot of people know me formally as a 3-star Pirelli professional, but I resigned from that position about 1.5 years ago now to enter the horse world by myself. I'm a huge advocate of barefoot and bitless riding, but I don't really have anything against bits, but for me it's always very interesting how to get people into the bitless phenomena and make the world a nicer place for the horses and humans.
Okay, and so how did you get into horsemanship?
That's quite a long story. Actually, one of my books talks about that in certain depth, and that's The Horse That Broke 2 Legs, my mare Mia. When I moved to the Netherlands, it's now 14 years ago, we kind of lost each other, and it actually got to the point where I was deathly afraid of her. My stomach would flip even at the thought of putting a halter on her head. We kind of grew apart. And that's where I kind of got, I'd already been studying natural horsemanship about 5 years prior, but I kind of got pulled back into the traditional way of training. And then it was my husband that actually turned around and said, why don't you try that Pat Pirelli guy stuff again? And that's when I got drawn back in. And within 3 weeks, I saw a change, not just in my horse, but also in myself. And we never looked back.
Okay.
So that's how I got introduced.
And how long ago was that?
That would be now, this is the 15th year.
15th?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
So a lot has happened since.
Yeah.
How did it improve your relationship with your horse? In what ways?
There's so many beautiful things that you learn from natural horsemanship, not just from a, you know, you learn more about who horses are and learning how to train them and how to reinforce positive behaviours and remove unwanted behaviours. But for me, but the life-changing part was the positivity, how to remain positive with your horse. I have Irish blood. I used to be quite fiery. You could even say a little bit short-tempered with the horse. And I learned to just keep that grounded and to recognise some things about the horse that they don't understand. They don't have clocks. They don't hear the words you say unless you train them in combined with body language. So I had a lot to learn and I learned it hard and fast. And my relationship with both of my horses is different, but the one thing that is the same is that they both want to be with me. When I turn up at the barn, they're already waiting at the gate. And these are things I never had prior to my lessons with natural horsemanship.
Can you tell the listeners me something about your horses?
Okay, so we've got Mia, and she's the star of the book The Horse That Broke 2 Legs. In Dutch, it's Het paard de 2 benen brak and overleefd. And she is 19 years old. She's still doing very well. She's 100% cured of the broken legs. She does suffer from PPID, which is Cushing's disease. And with recent research in the last 2 years, they are saying that one of the triggers for the Cushing's disease is, in fact, stress. So my heart aches a little bit because the time that she needed to recover from the broken leg could well have been a trigger for the stress side of that. But I have to say she was kept in a very nice environment. We set it up for her so she could live very nicely for 1 year. But still, the horse knows its leg is broken.
Yeah.
And that's quite stressful for them. So, and I write a bit about that in the book too.
Why did you decide to write a book about it?
Because most of the time horses are put down for even less fractures than she had. And I was given 3 options. One was to wait a little bit and then have an operation, as long as the wound was healing or the break was healing. The other option was to put her to sleep straight away. And the other option was to not operate and to just give her between 1 and 2 years to let the fracture heal by itself. But we had to have x-rays in between to make sure it was healing, because scar tissue can actually form over the bone, and then the horse would have been in serious trouble there. And I'm very pleased to say she did, with positive environment and a really nice spacious area where she could move around, despite the Deer and Arts telling me she needs to be in a stall 2 by 3, I think.
Yeah.
And stay there for a year. I couldn't do it. And I believe, again, they're very positive animals, and if you project positive energy and vibes towards them, they can recover. And that's exactly what we did, and it's exactly what she did.
Can I ask what happened that she
caused
the broken legs?
It was quite the... I still to this day don't actually really know. She started to get a hoof abscess, a hoof sphere, you call it in Dutch, mm-hmm. in the hind hoof, which was really rare because you don't often see hoof spheres in hind foots anyway. She had one that kind of went away, and then within 3 weeks she got another one, and she just didn't look quite right. And then after the third hoof sphere, I put her back in the pasture to be with her buddies. And during that day, one of her pasture buddies was in the field next to her, and she was running up and down the fence because she wanted to be with her buddy. So I had one lesson that day, and I thought I'll come back in an hour, and if she's not okay, if she's still going crazy at the fence, I'll let her through. Anyway, she was okay, but I let her through anyway. And then I get a phone call in the morning from somebody that said, Mia's standing on 3 legs in the field. It doesn't look good. You better get here now. And then when I arrived, she couldn't even walk. She had to walk like a crab because the third leg didn't touch the ground. And it was from there, one look from the DA, we both kind of knew something was seriously wrong. But still, with all my natural horsemanship training, she went into the trailer even with 3 legs, and she helped me help her get in. And she's a big girl, she's 850 kilos of big Mary mare horse. And she was fantastic actually for the whole period.
So
I still don't really know how the vet thinks that the hoof abscess was already maybe bone fragments that were trying to get out of the body, because she snapped off the patella, the knee joint. She completely disabled the whole knee.
Whoa.
So turning too hard or something like that.
Okay. So that was your introduction on Mia.
Yeah, that was me. That was pretty heavy.
Yeah, it is. How old is she now?
She's 19.
And is she on the pasture, or do you still?
Yeah, she's still in work. I have a couple of girls that share her with me, and we all have lots of fun with her. She doesn't really have to do much for me anymore, and we just teach her new things every now and then and have a lot of fun with her. Yeah.
And your other horse.
And Kaelin. Kaelin is my sunshine. He really is the partner for me. I wasn't actually looking for a new horse when I came across him. He was this beautiful little wild Connemara, imported from Ireland with his brother, or half-brother, Johnny. And from the moment I drove into the driveway and I saw this little horse in the pasture, my heart just left. And I was there because the lady had to tame them. They were completely wild. They'd been put in a trailer shipped over from Ireland, and they still had the rope hanging off of the halter. and she couldn't get near them. So I left her with lots of homework for 3 weeks, came back 3 weeks later. She'd not only done all of her homework, she'd done more. So now I could actually touch this horse. And without even thinking about it, I said to her, if you ever think about selling him, I would be very interested. And a couple of weeks later, she did call me and say he is for sale. So I bought him without telling my husband. And little by little, my husband kind of worked out that, yes, we have a second horse in the family now. And that was it. And he's my true partner in crime. Yeah. He's everything that's good about me. I've made a promise to him that I would never hurt him. Of course, I make mistakes, but he knows from my heart that we're learning together, and he's truly magnificent, and he has a lot of fans.
Cool. Yeah. So what do you do with him?
Everything.
Everything.
So we have quite a lot of subjects. Sometimes I'm so lost myself. People always say, my God, you have so many things. And I do. I do everything from archery, La Garrocha, work in equitation, the academic art of riding, from in hand through to riding, Piaf Passage. We also do, of course, all of the natural horsemanship levels, level 1 to 4, bridleless riding, and bridleless riding in collection. And in the past, I also did Western riding with him, and I rode with Pat a lot in his classes, and Pat also rode him for...
Yeah, so with the level 1 to 4, you're referring to Pirelli, right?
Yes, the Pirelli natural horsemanship.
And you used to be a Pirelli instructor.
Yes.
For how long have you been a Pirelli instructor?
I was a Pirelli instructor for 7 years.
7 years, okay. Yeah. That's quite a while. You just before the podcast, you told me that you are no longer a Pirelli instructor. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, there was quite a few reasons, really. For the best part, I kind of wanted to look more into other areas. And it's not to say that you're forbidden to do that with Pirelli. Of course, they encourage you. And my interests grew more in the academic world with Bent Brander Up and some of the other masters. But I found it to be confusing for my students. So I would have a photo, for example, on my Instagram account, and a lot of people would ask, that's not a Pirelli pad. Where's the Pirelli pad? What is that pad? I spend a lot of my time actually explaining why I'm doing what I'm doing, yeah, which was not really in the pot of Pirelli natural horsemanship. And also for the brand, I found myself not really selling the brand of Pat and Linda in that way, because I was so busy with other subjects and other areas, and there's so many of them,
yeah,
that I wasn't really finding myself to be faithful to them in that sense. So I decided it's best I go out on my own. They gave me a 2-year time where I could decide. I'm now in the second year.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I won't be going back. Okay. But of course, I would still love to study with Pat and Linda. That will never go away. And I'm a huge Pirelli student still.
What made you get into Pirelli? What was the attraction to it?
Well, I had when I lived in England, this was before mobile phones. And we still had magazines come in the post, as normal. And I was sitting in my kitchen and I heard a thud come through the letterbox. And with this magazine that I received on subscription at home, came a DVD. And the thud on the doormat was louder than usual, so it grabbed my attention. And it was actually a DVD made by Pirelli introducing you to their program. Hmm. And that was it. I was sold.
And how long ago is that?
That's 2000, year 2000. So
year
19 years ago.
19 years ago. Oh, wow. Because I believe Pirelli was kind of gaining... people got... Yeah, they got to know them in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Right?
So their program started in 2000, around...
No, this then. Was, I think, because they had a DVD in the post, but they were around when... Okay. You can see my VHS tapes up there. I have hundreds of them. I think when they really started to get noticed was in 1997.
Yeah.
And in 2000, they had DVDs, and I think in 2005, when we have social media... And the possibilities there, then they got even bigger.
Okay.
So marketing experts.
So you what was it exactly that you were hooked on?
in the Pirelli program. I think it's the clear, black and white teaching. And it's just, it's kind of methodic. And
yeah,
it gives
it's very
you a plan.
Structured.
Yeah, it's structured. It gives you a plan, and some things just make so much sense. And then in one DVD, I think I watched every single DVD at least 10 times. In one DVD, you'll watch that DVD 5 times, and then you'll watch it a 6th time, and there's going to be things you heard you never heard before. And it just goes on and on. The information is an overload. Sometimes it is too much information. So you have to find some structure yourself. To learn it and just be patient and understand that it takes years, not months.
It's really, I mean, working with horses anyway is personal development.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it does take years. So, you're an instructor. Mm-hmm. What kind of problems do you help with?
Pretty much everything, really. I prefer actually to teach on a private basis. I do hourly lessons, sometimes 2 hours, depending if there is actually a horse with human problems, and sometimes clinics. But I've been encouraged more and more now to do clinics where I can actually really dig deeper, and especially with problem solving, not just with horse behavior, but with even putting things like the bridle on, the saddle on. Sometimes it really is not just about that the equipment doesn't fit or they have a bad back. Sometimes it really is just really bad habits and skills from the human's behalf. The problems and things that I come across quite often are pretty standard. Horses that bite, horses that push, horses that kick, horses that are treated not like horses. And or they don't have the boundaries. I don't want to use the word trained, but set, so that the horse is treated like a horse. And the human is not spoiling them too much because of their affections and their love. And sometimes people can get quite upset about that because these horses are their babies. Everybody loves their horses just as much as you or I. But we have to. I try to always find a way where I can show the human an example with their horse, a positive one, and then that they can actually do that themselves and make them feel successful. Both the human and the horse feel successful in that moment, because sometimes the learning can be very confronting, mm-hmm. Especially if the horse is pushing on your space. Nobody wants that, and there's very few ways you can correct that without being too mean or mad. We have to make it very clear to the horse. So the most biggest problems are horses evading their human spaces.
Yeah,
but it's very easy if you just set boundaries.
We call it problems, but just, do you have a favorite problem
problem?
Or to help with?
Things like the horse not wanting to be with the humans. Again, it's a very confronting subject, because if I was to take the halter off in a paddock and the horse usually walks to me or it walks away.
Yeah.
So where I see the biggest smile and change in my student is when we can teach them to understand why the horse does that, and to see the change in both the human and the horse, and the horse actually seek to be with their human, not in their space, because that leads to everything else. That leads to the bigger picture. If I want to lead my horse into the binnabuck, or I want to lead my horse to the trail, and then I want to get on his back, everything is related. So, and if my horse wants to be with me, that's half of the of everything right there. If the horse doesn't want to be with me, then it's something else. Every single day I'm on a barn and there are over 200 horses there. And it's very beautiful. It is a lot of horses, but the setup is very beautiful, and we're set right in the middle of nature in the dunes. And every day I have my cup of coffee and I sit and just look at the environment and the trees. And within 10 minutes, I can watch maybe 3-5 horses that are taken to the bin and buck with their humans, and them horses do not want to go into the arena. And this always makes me curious, because it's like the horse is telling them something, so therefore they get dragged by the bit or they get whipped to go into the arena. But the horse is already telling them at that point, I don't want to go in this torture pit with you. What is in there for me? Nothing. So we try to figure out all the time what's in it for the horse, how they can feel better about themselves, whilst they're working with us and end the session so that the horse always feels like a superstar. And it doesn't matter if things are not going perfect. For me, helping the horse feel successful is the key number one component. And of course, that's the same with Pirelli too.
Yeah. What do you think about the current state of, well, not maybe not the horse world, but let's take sports or, mm-hmm. or the dressage.
Yeah.
Sports, for instance. What do you think about it?
I think it's very interesting right now, and I've spoke about this a lot, especially the last couple of weeks. There is kind of an uprising happening. I won't mention any names, but just this past weekend in Rotterdam, one of our favourites, especially in the UK, had blood on her horse. And, you know, it doesn't matter what excuse you have. I don't care about the excuse. The blood was there. Now, and with that set aside, the sports themselves, if the rules were just kept to, the actual script, the rules, then I would be more in favour of the sport. But unfortunately, the judges are not trained. The judges are very biased in their own old-fashioned opinion. And until this is changed, and until the judges are actually trained or changed, we're not going to see a change in the sports. They need to really bite down on the rules that are written.
Yeah, it is, because when you look at the FEI rules.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with those rules, actually.
No, they're actually very beautiful when
you
read them.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, if you read them, you really think, well, this is like dressage should be.
Yes, yeah.
But, yeah, the judges are not...
they're not sticking to it.
No, they're not sticking to it, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And in the rule book, it says that the horse should be a happy athlete, elastic movement, soft hands, soft contact, soft, soft, light, light.
And the problem with that, too, is that it's a lot of it is quite subjective, you know?
Indeed, yeah.
There's a lot of different opinions on soft hands or a happy athlete.
Yeah, this is true, yeah.
And that makes it hard as well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunately true, and from me, I don't want to see veins popping out of hands when they call that contact is lightness.
Yeah.
I think they should set a standard of rules.
So how do you contribute to horse welfare improvement?
Oh, many ways. Well, I try to do my best part every day by educating myself and being a better example, for sure. And of course, there's always going to be criticism, even with that. But... I think the more and more people that can become better examples and not troll, and by troll I mean constantly go on with the negative comments and slamming people that they think are wrong. There is another way to go around that, and that's actually why I wrote the poem book, to just find another way to convey messages that we all kind of can relate to, but without abusing people. The abuse has got to stop. The world is becoming fast, and mostly because of social media, a very egotistic, opinionated, driven world. We all know this. So we need to find some kind of pathway where we can all get along and support each other. And even for this problem that happened with the spurring and the blood, I hope she learned from that. And I hope she will never, ever, ever do that again. So my part in the welfare world is to keep on supporting especially charities and welfare. I sign a lot of petitions, especially for the Mustangs in America, and for different kinds of horse abuse situations in the other hemisphere. And I've done a little bit of work as well for charity work and earning some money to give back to the, like a donation and stuff like that. So it's hard because, of course, we all have limited time, but where I can, I do my piece.
So if you were to give horse welfare a definition, mm-hmm. what would it be for you?
A definition of horse welfare? Well, you know, I will talk about the new book. So I'm writing a new book It's going to take about another year. And this book is called Who Horses Are. And I'm still working on a subtitle and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And this book is purely about who horses are, how they perceive the world, and what I think their expectations of us are, because I do believe they have expectations. I say to my students every day, don't worry, because I think it's the horses that think we're stupid. They are so smart, they are so intelligent on so many levels that when you can actually tune into that, everybody's happier. And I'm not just talking about bitless and barefoot. I'm talking about just really learning how to be with your horse. Yeah, you can learn some technique and tricks and stuff like that. But if it's not really coming from your heart, it's not going to give you the full meaning behind it.
So horse welfare is for you maybe seeing the horse for who he truly
yes,
is.
Yes, exactly.
And,
okay,
yeah, working with that.
Yeah, and I feel that's missing still. Despite all of the information and everything that's out there, that's what I want to bring across the world. Because if the human can see that and truly put their heart in their hand and touch their horse and recognize that even the touch their horse can feel and even go into a state of process or just a feeling of love and receive beautiful hormones just from their touch, then it might just stop them from doing something else.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it sounds a bit difficult, but it's not when you can show people.
It's all about understanding.
Yes.
Eventually.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. So about improving horse welfare, what do you hope the horse world looks like in about 5 years?
Oh, this I'm very curious about, because again, I see the uprising coming. I want to see bitless accepted in all sports. Not to say the bit is a wrong thing. You can be. Some horses, if it's not trained well, a bitless bridle can be just as mean as a bit. But I would like to see that option there.
Yeah.
I would like to see the option that you don't have to wear spurs. I would like to see the option that during a dressage test, when you enter, you can have the opportunity to show your horse around the arena first, for example. Just all of this stuff that takes time, but people are not prepared to put the time into it. I would like to see a completely new organisation like the FEI, but a completely new structured organisation with new rules and a new sponsorship that evolves and really has its own guidelines and rule book and actually really sticks to it. And within that organisation, we have all of the sports, show jumping, dressage, work and equitation. That's not going to happen in 5 years. Maybe that's a 15-year goal. maybe I'll be a part of producing that. I don't know. But for me to see the uprising continue, I think. And in the next 5 years, we will see that change, especially on social media. The beautiful pictures of people with their horses riding on the beach. And
Do you think social media is contributing to the uprising?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's the main contribution.
Yeah. There's so much knowledge out there, mm-hmm. and it's so easily accessible for people as well.
Yeah, and we have to find a way to utilize it better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I try to do my best with
yeah, this is great. Yeah, it's really awesome.
So to contribute to the improvement of horse welfare, also one of the reasons you wrote the poem book?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you tell us something about the poem book?
So the poem book is kind of a collection of subjects of my experiences, not just the last 20 years, but the last 40 years, I hate to say it, since I was 2-3 years old with horses. If 100 people read the book and 100 people only like one poem, I'll be happy. But so far the feedback has been very nice, and some of the poems are very deep, some of them are very personal, some of them are kind of what everybody might or might not feel. So yeah, there's, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So for the listeners, we have a giveaway. You can win actually both the poem book as well as the horse that broke two legs. Even in het Nederlands. Dus als je nu nog luistert, dan kun je dus meedoen om zowel het gedichtenboek als het boek Het paard dat twee benen brak te winnen. Als je hier kans op wil maken, kun je gaan naar horseinmind.nl/Zoe, Z-O-E. Als je daar je naam en e-mailadres achterlaat, dan maak je kans. En over een week zal ik dan een winnaar bekendmaken. En dan krijg je allebei de boeken opgestuurd. Thank you, Zoe, for that great giveaway.
Hi, you're welcome.
Do you want to add something to the podcast?
No, I think this is okay.
It was really cool to get to know you a little bit, because as I said in the introduction, I only know you from Facebook and you know, social media, and I've been at your yard or where your horse is quite a few times in the past. So it was fun to finally get to meet you.
Yeah, and you too.
Thank you very much for joining the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you.